Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmute.
This is an archived edition of AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, exploding history. It's been more than 70 years since Unalaska came under attack during World War II, but you don't have to look hard to find the remnants. The community is littered with old gunnery installations, battered Quonset huts, and bunkers, some of which are being preserved for posterity. But there's history and there's hazard. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, the shells and bombs that keep washing up on Unalaska's shores fall somewhere in between.
Out on a quiet beach at the edge of the island, Unalaska's shooting range is where local gun owners go for target practice. But the team of Army and Air Force munitions experts that have converged on the range aren't here to practice anything. They've flown in just to examine a mysterious shell that may date back to World War II.
Go ahead and take a couple minutes and try to get a quick ID.
That's Air Force Sergeant Luke Mefford. He's the head of the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Team at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. The EOD team has come out to Unalaska, Adak, and other Aleutian communities over the years to identify and safely destroy leftover munitions from the war. Usually these items get picked up by beachcombers or fishermen. Even though they've been swimming in salt water for decades, that doesn't mean they're inert. Army Sergeant Joe Pataki explains.
Some old explosives use like nitroglycerin, which is highly sensitive. And being so old, it's not in a state that it's supposed to be in. You mess around with it, it can definitely go off. That's why we're around. That's why we got a job.
The job that brought them to Unalaska this time was an effort at historical preservation gone wrong. The Unalaska Corporation runs the World War II Museum. Their manager, Dave Gregory, says he was out at lunch one day when an employee of a local fish plant dropped off a donation.
It was about, 20 inches long, 6 inches at the base, and then it kind of tapered down, kind of a greenish, dirty color, I guess.
Gregory is no stranger to ordnance. He says the museum does like to collect small pieces to put in its displays. They add some color. This shell was different, though. It was heavier and bigger than anything Gregory had seen, and it didn't seem like a good thing to keep around. So he called his friends at Public Safety. They took custody of the shell and contacted the EOD team for disposal. In Unalaska, the team is coping with miserable weather. They take turns snapping photos on the windy, snowy beach. One by one, they dart into a running fire truck for warmth while they consult munitions manuals. Finally, Sergeant Mefford walks up. They have an ID.
It's an artillery round, more than likely fired from a naval ship out in the water somewhere, either for target practice or depending on the exact time period, may have been used against enemy actions.
Mefford says he can't share any more information than that because the rest is classified.
Can't really give you specifics on it, just due to our disclosure rules on it.
The team wastes no time setting up the blast site.
We're going to have enough antenna to get up on top of this, Scotty?
Yeah, we should. Those caps.
They pack the shell in a hole and cover it with about 6 pounds of C4, a plastic explosive. They poke in some blasting caps, which are tuned into a remote control. Once it's set up, we're directed to take cover several hundred yards away behind two gravel berms. We're waiting for the remote control to warm up when the team asks me if I want to be the one to set off the explosives.
Can I?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
are you serious?
Yeah.
I can do it?
Yeah.
We'll
be ready to go in about 30 seconds.
We're not doing it yet. He's going to set his camera up when we give him the go ahead.
While we wait for Fire Chief Abner Hoag to set up his video camera, I get some basic instructions.
So when we get ready to fire this thing, under this cover is one fire button. So you just press and hold one of them, and then press and hold the other. And it'll be about a 2 second delay, and then the shot will go off.
Wow.
Oh yeah, and before you set that off, you have to yell fire in the hole three times as loud as you can.
Okay.
Once forward, once off to your left, once off to your right.
Okay.
Air Force Sergeant Scott Rice and I trade. He takes my microphone and recorder, and I take his remote detonator. Without further ado, fire in the hole!
Hold it up nice and high.
Nice job. Oh, whoa! That is a giant plume of smoke. Wow, that's a rush.
Bits of shrapnel rain through the air, some of them even flying past the berms carried by the high winds. Once the dust settles, the team tells me that they like to let visitors detonate the explosives when they're working in the field.
Thanks for letting me do that. It was really fun.
All right, we're good to go. We can go down and check it out.
All that's left of the shell is a 4-foot round hole. They measure it and pack up their equipment pretty fast.
Yeah, I know the aftermath isn't as exciting.
There's a hole in the ground.
The team heads back to the Unalaska firehouse for a quick debrief. I ask if any of them thought about the history of the shell before they blew it up, and they say they did.
And it's just neat to come across something that, you know, your granddad or great uncle, whatever, might have shot 70 years ago, and hey, now it's laying on the beach now, so.
Probably looked a lot better, though.
Yeah, probably looked a lot shinier back then.
The EOD team is pretty sure that ordnance will keep washing up in Unalaska for a while. That's why when it's time for them to fly back to their base in Anchorage, saying see you later seems a lot more appropriate than saying goodbye. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're headed to Tooleksac, a community of almost 400 people near the Kuskokwim River.
I'm George Lamont, and I live in Tooleksac. We're about 30 miles away from the Kilbuck Mountains. We live in a pretty vegetated area, quite flat. We're about roughly a mile and a half away from the Kuskokwim River up a river called the Tooleksac River. Right now, there's possibility of another flood since 2009, I think. The conditions are quite bad right now since the snow's been melting. We have a lot of puddles and we have no road maintenance or anything like that. We have no water and sewer. We still live off what they call a honey bucket. And we still have to pack our own water. Our electricity is around 65 cents per kilowatt hour. And our fuel prices, well, last time I heard it was $10 a gallon, and then it went down to $9.50 a gallon. It's pretty hard living out here in this remote village here. For fun, most people mostly play bingo, and most of the time there's what they call fiddling. And what fiddling is they have a band in the meeting, the group meeting. Most of the people from the village go to that fiddling, and plus there's some basketball games.
George Lamont is resident of Tooleksac. His interview is from May 2013. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to this archived edition of AK. We had help from Lauren Rosenthal and Annie Feit. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.